levantaré mi bandera, alzando mi país o estando allá afuera, porque para mí, mira, no existen fronteras. Yo levantaré mi bandera, oh.
Levantaré mi bandera, estando en mi país o estando allá afuera, porque para mí, mira, no existen fronteras. No, no, Y es que hay mucho sentimiento, lo grito al viento, de ser latino nunca me arrepiento. Lo digo desde la Suiza, centroamericana, rebote en Colombia.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to those joining us live on Facebook and or Riverside. You're watching Revolución's Latina Entrepreneur Panel, part of WAFI Media's Hispanic Heritage Month 2022 virtual event presented by Celso. I am your host, Rafael, a.k.a. The Latin Babbler. Wanted to first give a huge shout-out to that presenting sponsor, Celso, the first hemp-infused beverage inspired by Mexican flavors and culture. It is an extreme privilege to be presented by a company that is woman, Latina, and queer-owned. Please support them. Go to CelsoDrink.com and purchase your drinks today. All right, let's get to it. We're going to bring in our amazing panelists. And before I even get to that, this is going to be long because all of these award-winning Latinas are over here. And, every single time I have to do these, I put people to sleep. So we're going to go with this. So here we go. Our very first guest is an award-winning entrepreneur, business mentor, public speaker, podcast host, community leader, who's been featured on Univision, Telemundo, named in Boston's Business Journal 40 Under 40, El Mundo Boston 30 Under 30. She's a co-founder of her own company, and she did that at like the age of 15, and has worked with C-suite executives in Boston and startup companies for 14 years now. Welcome to the show, Vanessa Farino.
Thank you so much.
See, we try to do these intros. Here we go. The next one. So the next one is a Latina that is redefining the standard for modern home buying. She is an award-winning real estate professional who has earned Lifestyle International Realty Top Producer of the Year three separate times. So passionate about her work that the results, and she's been deemed the deal maker. And that's what we know her as, the deal maker. Welcome, Natalie Rivero.
Thank you for having me.
That's great. All right. And our next panelist has over 6 years of experience in designing exceptional print, graphic, and digital designs in the marketing environment. She is the founder and CEO of Ruby Creative Co. that is helping clients, aspiring entrepreneurs, and or nonprofit organizations to achieve their marketing goals. Welcome, Ruby Herrera. Am I saying it right? Or should I be rolling my R's there?
Yeah, but there's no H, there's Herrera.
Herrera, there we go. I said it in the Spanglish English way. So yeah. I was like Herrera, there was a J there. So I'm extremely honored to be sharing the platform with you amazing ladies today. And we're going to try and get, as much of your story as possible, talk about some entrepreneurship, maybe hopefully give some insight to people who are looking forward to starting their business or having some type of creative insight. But first, we want to get to know you. We're going to go round robin, and we first do the origin story. So we want to know, how you grew up. What was it like growing up in the Latino household? Vanessa, we're going to go ahead and start with you.
Hey, so I grew up in Boston. I also lived in Bolivia when I was in my adolescent ages. But living in Boston, I was probably one of two Hispanic families in the entire city. So that was quite unique. but I think, growing up in Boston today, it's definitely a place where there's so much diversity. I loved living in my mom's country of Bolivia as well. And my adolescent years where I, fun fact, attended military school as well. It's definitely been a journey. I started working in corporate, like as soon as I was 18 years old, working alongside of the right hand of CEOs in male dominated industries. And for the most part, as a Latina growing up, I've always been the only Latina in the room, the only woman, and also the youngest one, usually by 20 years.
Wow. That's insane. Natalie, what about you?
I'm totally the opposite. I grew up in Miami, so I've been surrounded by the Latin culture. My parents are Cuban. My parents are Cuban immigrants. And for me, I think the biggest thing was growing up from Cuban immigrants. They were very much about like go to college, because if you don't go to college and get a degree, you know, like you're not going to be anyone, you know, basically it was that mindset. There was never an entrepreneurial mindset, right? It was like, you had to get a degree to be able to be successful. I mean, and I did get a degree that I'm not using, and I went the entrepreneurship route.
She said, I'm not using.
But that wasn't the, like, that wasn't the actual journey that was set out for me growing up. You know, it was either you go this route or you're going to be a manager at McDonald's is the most you ever do. Not that that's a bad thing, but that's like the, you know, expectation of what your parents think. So, you know, my parents worked corporate America, normal 9 to 5, you know, very traditional household. And then here I come and throw a total curveball.
That's awesome. All right. So let's see, Ruby.
I was born and raised in Chicago. So my family, my dad was, is from Mexico, but he came at such a young age at like 6 years old that he grew up in the Chicago culture and the house music and the, like all of that. Like, so my dad became very, like, he was very Americanized at, when I was growing up, you know, and my mom is second generation Mexican American. So with my mom, although they had, you know, my family and my mom's side had come over, it's still, there was no kind of like idea of what are you supposed to do, except like, we're going to figure it out in school, right? Like everything's like, you're going to figure it out in school. You're going to go to college and that's how it's supposed to work, because that's what they told us. So I, my dad was not as super involved, but he was somewhat encouraging as a kid, like, you need to go to college. So then when I finally said, I'm like, oh, I want to be an artist. I was 8 years old and I'm like, I want to be an artist. And he's all like, no. You need to be like a nurse or like a doctor. I'm like, oh, I thought you didn't care what, as long as I went to college. And then he wasn't so supportive, because he obviously, I mean, at him being influenced by his parents, you know, Mexican, only speak Spanish, you know, there's like, oh no, you need to do something that's going to make money. Like that was it. That was the no questions asked. You need to do something that, and for them, it was accounting, finance, doctor, nurse, you know, and I told my dad, I'm like, no, I want to be an artist. And I'm going to be an artist. So I decided to just go with it. I didn't really know what an entrepreneur was when I was 13 and I discovered that I wanted to be a graphic designer. I mean, at 15 in high school, I'm very blessed and fortunate to have known exactly what I wanted to do with the rest of my life. I did go ahead and get my degree, which I'm using it in my entrepreneur career and my business. And I love that, because I feel like now my dad's like, oh, you know, my younger siblings, like, I believe you, whatever your little sister wants to do, I believe it because you did it. So I believe you now. So I believe her. And I think that that's beautiful to see that the next generation is a lot different.
What got you into like graphic design? Cause that's one of the areas that I'm kind of like really fond of. I do web design and graphic design. What kind of triggered you to going into that specific field?
You know, when you go to like Walmart and Target and then like you get those little bracelet things and or the little clay things, I think I took that too seriously. And then I'm like, I want to be an artist. And I guess at my age, I felt like computers, dial up, you know, the whole like the my computer was connected to like, you know, the wire was connected to the wall and all of that stuff. And I felt like I really enjoyed doing, you know, doing art, and I had a pretty rough childhood. And for me, art became my escape, my way of feeling good about myself. And I incorporated that with computers, which at the time I didn't even know that was a real thing. And so I started doing research and people were like, you're really good at this. And I guess with that encouragement, I decided, I'm like, you know what? This is something that I can help in my community, in the Latino community. This is something that's not very common. And this is something that maybe I can use my skills to help other people.
Very cool. Natalie, what about you? You're real estate.
So for me, you know, I worked for attorneys for 8 years. For me, I was supposed to be an attorney. And after working for them for a little while, I hated it. And I'm not admin, like, I don't like admin work whatsoever. Now I even have an assistant who does my admin work. But I came to know this because I had a problem at every job that I had doing this job. I was good at it. Did I like it? No. So after a little while at this job, my work started deteriorating because I got bored. right? So now I started realizing, like, I like talking to people. I like handling people. Like, I don't want to be chained to a desk forever. So someone came into my life who was in the mortgage industry. And this person told me, like, you're so good at, you know, socializing and networking and talking to people and, you know, empathizing with people. Like, why don't you get your license? Mm-hmm. I was like, I'm not a salesperson. Like, I don't do sales. Like, I don't even like the people in the kiosks that chase you down to, like, do your eyebrows. Like, no. I was like, the first time someone tells me no, I'm going to be like, yeah, okay, that's fine. So I had to change the mindset of seeing it as a salesperson versus, like, you're guiding them through a journey, right? You're providing a service that they need, right? So the mindset had to change. And once I started seeing it from that side, it was an automatic switch. Like, I got my license for the sole purpose of, like, oh, I have credit card debt and I have student loans. I'll close one or two deals a year and I'll pay that off. After I closed my first deal, I walked into work and I was like, guys, I'm out. Like, I've never seen a $10,000 check before. Like, let's be real. Like, I was 29. And at that point, I had a $10,000 check in my hand. And I'm like, I'm done. I'm out. Bye. And there went, after that, it was all history. Like, done. I was sold.
Could you have been an attorney? Like, would you have argued a way to win?
I argue about everything. So yes, I could have.
Because that's what everybody thought I should have been. They all just thought I should have been because I talked too damn much.
So they're like, but I saw so much, like, awful stuff while I worked for them that I got so disgusted by the industry, by that system, that I was like, no.
That makes sense. Yeah. All right, Vanessa, you're going to have to explain to me the services that you provide to these companies. First of all, what is C-suite?
C-suite is anybody who has a C-level title within companies. So those are CEOs, chief executive officers, chief financial officers, chief operating officers, chief marketing officers, like the
creme de la creme, the ones in the top. So what is it that you were providing? Because I know you're working with small businesses and startups.
Yeah.
So what are the services that you're providing?
So if we go way back, I can totally relate with Natalie because I used to work at a law office because I was supposed to be a lawyer too, because I was always getting in trouble, asking the questions, pero por qué, pero why, quiero saber, que entiendo, que dime más. And Vanessa was always in trouble. And I was like, okay, before I really commit to this really big investment, let me go work there and, like, feel it out.
Yeah.
And I was promoted within 6 months from, like, receptionist to admin assistant to legal assistant. I spoke three languages and I was like in. Then I was getting sent to court, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I realized I had my zone of genius is, like, I'm a really fast learner. I read people, I know what they want, and I go straight to that. Hence why I've been working with C-suite people, you know, being able to understand what they need, what they want, before anything else. So I thought, let me translate my career of 14 years working with these C-suite people. I mean, you know, and take those skill sets from acquisitions and fundraising and board relations, people in hiring, sales and marketing, et cetera, startup, right? And then let's bring these frameworks and strategies to women-owned businesses, because while this information is not rocket science, it kind of is, because you really can't Google it.
Yeah.
And I had this moment of reflection when a couple of years ago, Elon Musk had a tweet that said, instead of baby showers, let's do business showers for our friends when they have businesses.
And I was heard, like, about that. Yeah.
Right. It's like, let's bring resources to them. I thought to myself, how is it possible that all of these companies sit on this goldmine information in these small businesses, pop shops, whatever that might be, these people who actually have aspirations, dreams, you know, it's not business transaction. It's like, it's human interaction, building relationships, que saber cómo está la abuela, que la mamá, que esto, que el otro, like, it's family. I'm like, how do they not have the resources? And they're ultimately the people who are driving the communities, contributing to our economy. You know what I mean? And more than ever now, women have dropped from the workforce post pandemic. I think the status was like over 2 million. So I was like, where are they getting money? We need to make it rain. I want everybody to make it rain. And so that's ultimately how I just translated it. I'm like, I've opened up all of these business. I go to success. I get bored. Natalie, I totally relate. It's like, we're hustle people, right? Not hustle, but like, we're just like, go, 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 go. How do we fix it? How do we fix it? How do we fix it? How can we be better? And I just took a little bit of all of that and I'm like, okay, we're going to provide business mentorship. I've walked the walk, had my businesses, work with CEO people. I have the 360 view. How can I go help women-owned businesses to build generational wealth and make it rain?
Yeah, we were talking about the generational wealth on the finance panel, because a lot of the things that we are trying to do, especially in the Latino community lately, is to try to make sure that we're kind of not repeating the past. So, you know, building generational wealth is something that's like really huge. I have a question with the obstacles, because I know that, you know, for people who are trying to be entrepreneurs. So I heard that, I think it's, especially in the Latino community, we pay roughly 70% of all of the funding that goes into any business that we put into. So we're not given the same opportunities, you know, as some of our other counterparts for as far as like commercial loans or, you know, hands up, just even what we do here, what we're doing here, you know, there's a big difference as far as like sponsorship opportunities compared to what there are for like some other events. Did you guys feel like that was some of the obstacles that you guys ran into? I'll start with you, Ruby.
Yeah, I think that because I'm the oldest in my family on both sides, on my mom's side and my dad's side. First granddaughter. I mean, my grandmother even named me because I'm the first granddaughter. There was really no path. There was really nothing to compare yourself to than just the people that I surrounded myself with, like in school or conversations that I had with counselors and teachers. So with that being said, it wasn't like, you know, you need to find this resource that will help you fund this and will help you with that. I mean, like I said before, when I was when I discovered what I wanted to do and who I wanted to be, I didn't even know I was an entrepreneur. I didn't even know that was a real thing or that was a word, to be honest. I mean, it was just, I was just doing the thing. I was doing the thing that I love the most. Working. And that's what I was doing it. And then, you know, doing what I'm really passionate about. So, and that comes at a price. And I think that being an entrepreneur and knowing that you need to fund yourself and you need to, you know, push through, you know, you break your heart a lot. It's very heartbreaking, you know, because you're constantly feeling like I'm not doing it. I'm not making it, or I'm not as good as this person, or comparing yourself, that you beat yourself up. So then it becomes even harder to be like, why am I funding this?
Yeah.
You know, so that's exactly where I saw myself. It's like, why am I doing this? And then I had to
start seeing the bank account.
Yeah. But you know, it really does have to do a lot with, you know, that one client or that one person you're helping, or like Natalie said, you know, you're guiding them through a journey. Cause what I do is very much the same thing as well. You know, I guide people through a journey of, you know, of their brands, of how they see themselves, how they want to see themselves, you know? So I think that just focusing on that and then just really, really feeling like there's a purpose, there's a bigger purpose. And this is bigger than me. Like, this is bigger than me. This is for my community. This is for my people. This is for my Latinos. This is for my family. Then the vision starts to become clearer. Then it's like, okay, I know it hurts right now, but it's going to pay off. Things are going to work out. So Natalie, that's how I started seeing things.
What about you, Natalie? What struggles did you run into? And financially, did you have to fund yours on your own?
I think that for me, it might be a little bit different, only because the moment in my life where I decided to take the leap was the ideal moment in my life. So law school for me was a little bit far-fetched, because law school for me was my parents couldn't afford it. Like, in all reality, it was like I was going to have to work in order to be able to pay for law school, right? So my parents, and supposedly your first year of law school, you're not supposed to work. So there was, you know, every reason why I shouldn't go. Now, I'll agree with Ruby that I didn't know that me going and selling real estate, that I was an entrepreneur. I didn't know what that word meant. That word, I didn't know what that word was growing up. So when I got in, my bills were extremely low, very basic, just the minimum of the minimum. You know, I didn't even have a car payment when I got in. So when I got in was the perfect time to start, you know, like getting into it, closing a deal here, a deal there. And my bills were so low that a $10,000 check could last me 3-4 months. You know, so I told myself, like, if I budget myself correctly, you know, and I don't close another deal for 2-3 months, you know, okay, I'm okay. But if in 2 or 3 months it hasn't happened, at least I have enough experience to go back into the work field. Thankfully, that's never happened, you know, but that was the mindset at the time. Now, you know, thankfully, I've never had that problem or had to think about going back. And for us, you know, I've had to invest back into my business because the more you invest, the more return you get. But at the same time, I can't count on my family for that. I'm the oldest as well, just like Ruby. I'm the oldest. I have younger siblings. I was the one that had to break all the barriers and figure it out. There's no other entrepreneurs in my family. Damn. You know, like I didn't even have friends that were entrepreneurs. So like for me, it was like this, figuring it out and going along.
Yeah, you're the one that's walking around with the flashlight trying to go through the tunnel.
And make mistakes and keep on going. So that's kind of how it was.
Vanessa, you've been doing this since 15.
Yes.
Like, what the hell? I'm just going to say it like that. Like, what?
Since yeah, I know. 15,
I was 15.
Odd teenager. I hated school. I was dyslexic and I didn't know until my early 20s. Hello. But in school, I was like, I just want to work. I just want to work because I felt like learning and practice was easier for me. So, but you know, who knew? Let's not test this one and let's just whatever. And what I realized is then that my 4 years of high school, I was that oddball who was not leaving for work study. I was taking 4 years of accounting, 4 years of consumer economics, business organization management, computer classes, because all that stuff was like fun for me, like super fun. It was just trying to figure out how things work, why, how to make it faster, da da da. I don't know. I'm just curious. I'm creative. I've always put my head first, sign me up to the unknown because I'm going to figure it out how to do it faster and how to do it better. And it's just been like that. So at 15, we had the opportunity with my mom to start a retail boutique, and we had it for 4 years and it was really successful. We moved locations 3 times due to the demand, not enough space for inventory, parking spots, clients. We started with a women's collection. Then we went into a men's collection. It was pretty freaking awesome because then I was also implementing my classes to the business and I was learning firsthand, like classroom, you know, the boutique, classroom. Marketing pre-social media. That was actually, I was talking about that at the radio station yesterday. I was being interviewed and I was like, do you guys remember social media, like marketing before social media? La radio, the newspapers, the events, you know, the ads, like you had to get creative. And that's something that I thought was really cool. And I don't know. I'm really excited. I was able to experience that, both sides of marketing when it comes to that.
Very cool. A question is from like each of you guys, what is like some of the biggest misconceptions for each of your fields? Natalie, you're in real estate. So I'm going to start with you. What is some of the biggest misconceptions for somebody who's going into that field?
That it's easy. So the biggest misconception is that it's easy.
Yeah.
Right? I love people who tell me that they're going to get their license to make quick and easy money. That's my favorite thing to hear.
Quick and easy money.
And easy money. There is nothing quick in real estate. Okay. Like whatever you do today, you do not reap the benefit of for at least 60 to 90 days, if not more. So where is the quick in that? Nowhere.
You're talking right? Because of like escrow and things like that, right? Like what they have to go through for the house to go through.
It's not only escrow, 45 days minimum.
Yeah.
Right. And like getting the client, nurturing the client, taking the client to see properties, getting the property, you know, getting the client under contract, all of that takes time. Some clients are not even warm clients. You have to like follow up and nurture them and build the relationship with them. So there is nothing quick and easy. There is nothing but rejection, 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 rejection in real estate. So if you don't have thick skin, it's not the place for you. Like I tell myself, the more no's I get, the faster I'm going to get to a yes. So give me all the no's, bring them on. Cause that means I'm closer and closer to my yes. So I don't know.
What about you, Vanessa? What about you?
I think the biggest misconception is that you live, well, I feel like I'm just going to call it how it is. There's a lot of business coaches out there that are making it seem like they're these influencers traveling jets doing all this BS. But in reality, what they're not realizing is that you're dealing with humans and you're dealing with small businesses or whatever that means, right? Like just whatever type of client that you have. And there's the big of a 6-7 figures, kumbaya, feel the energy, meditate, journal, da 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 da. You know, it's like buy some crystals. It's like you gotta put the fucking work. Sorry.
That's okay.
No matter what industry you're in, and there's a lot of people that are like, oh, well, that seems great. You deal with people. And then, wow, these you see all these coaches talking about like these $1 million, da da da.
Yeah. That's the biggest thing.
Go check their program. How many times do you actually get to talk to them? You know what I mean? So
yeah.
I think the biggest thing I was resistant to enter this industry was because of that, because a very human person and I love creating experiences. And then I was like, wait a minute. I'm like, I'm here to freaking disrupt this industry because I am human. We're going to talk to people from diverse backgrounds and perspectives because right now we seem to only have a certain few people who are represented in this industry. No hay Latinas. You don't find Latinas. If you ask them, what's a business coach? What's a business mentor? What is that?
Yep.
It's your fairy godmother to make you a lot of money.
I love it.
I think I'm gonna go into that field now just because it's so undersaturated. That's gonna be me. It's just gonna be like Grandma Babbler, just walking around with a dress. Ruby, what about you?
Oh my gosh! I mean, as a designer, I feel like you could do it really quick, right? Like especially like a logo or something. They'd be like, "Oh, you can just. I need it by tomorrow. I mean, I have 6 years of experience, but I mean, as far as like, I'm talking about my degree possibly, that's as far as I go back to just say, you know, like I got the credentials, I guess, to show that I'm professional, blah, blah, blah. But I've been doing this since I was like 13, 15 as well. I mean, in high school, this was serious for me. I really was going to become an artist one way or another. I would speak to the coaches, the teachers. Can I make a flyer for you? Are you guys promoting the track team? Can I create the flyer? You know, the senior class. I was very involved in high school. I think that in high school is when I really like created that. I started to create that image for myself where it was like, okay, like she's the real deal. Like she's creating like homecoming posters for the runner-ups, you know, like I really wanted to put myself out there. I really wanted to be a designer for whatever reason, you know, and that whole like, oh yeah, you could do it really quick. Just because I could do it really quickly doesn't mean that I'm going to charge you any less.
That's,
you know,
that's exactly logo. It. So
if this was a $50 logo, then that's why not that I have anything against Canva because I have my clients use Canva. I work with it. You know, I'm not afraid of it.
Yeah,
but you go download a Canva logo then, you know, because what I do has taken a lot of years to master. I mean, I have seen, you know, when we do the one-on-one and I show them, you know, the concepts and we go over some of the changes, little bitty changes here and there, and I do them quickly. It's because it's taken years to master something like that. And I've mastered it really well. So that's, I guess that's the biggest thing about a graphic designer, right? It's kind of like, oh, you can do it. I just a flyer. Oh, I need it by tonight. It's 5 o'clock in the afternoon. What is tonight to you? Like,
I had the same issue. That's one of the biggest things, especially in web design and things like that. Oh, my goodness. I can't tell you how many times.
3-4 month minimum for a website.
To the Canva executive people, we use your product to do all of our like Instagram stuff and things of that nature. It's really great. But I mean, if you want a logo or if you want like very specialty type situations, I mean, you got to go to some of the most extensive software that's out there. And then you got to have some of the most impressive people like Ruby create that image for you. And that's what people don't understand. It took years to master the ability to save time so that we can do the product in the fastest way possible.
I am not McDonald's.
Yeah. Yeah, they're saying.
I am not McDonald's. Okay. I know everyone wants everything quick and easy, drive through. Like, I'm not a drive through. Let me tell you.
So that sounds so bad, though. I'm not a drive through.
You know what? But I'm saying the reality of it because I do feel a lot that's the biggest misconception, right? Like you asked me.
Well,
like,
it's because, you know, with places like Fiverr and.
Like it's 1-3.
Yeah. Right. It's because they go and they see these concepts of places like Fiverr or like in Natalie, you know, they find these real estate agents who charge less for fees and this and that, but they're dealing with people who probably don't have the experience that they need to have, you know, to get the best results or the best purchase or, you know, the best guidance, you know, and I think that's the biggest issue there.
The other thing within any industry, right?
Yeah.
You're protected. You got to protect your clients.
People that came in while the market was booming, realtors that came in when the market was booming the last 2 years was crazy. 2020, 2021 was insane, right? So all these people saw realtors making crazy money and that it sort of came easy because there was such a high demand. They were like, this is cake. But they weren't around in 2015 when I got my license. And it wasn't like that. It wasn't the wild, wild west. You know, it was a normal market. So now they're freaking out when the market is changing because it's no longer easy where you can throw a dime and hit somebody who wants a house. Now it's not like that anymore.
I don't even know where all these people are coming from. Like housing, it's more expensive to even do that process now. Like houses are more expensive. And so, but I give you guys props. Each of you are like professionals and experts in your field. And it's amazing that you guys can get that done. I'm going to go through statistics because that's what we do. We're going to turn around and talk about entrepreneurship, especially Latinas in the corporate world. So I was reading an article. I think it was on, Latinas in Business, Inc. So it's like latinasinbusiness.us, I think is the website. Says there's so few Latinas in the Fortune 500 company. Now, this is an old article. I was reading this. It's from August 2022. So it's fairly recent. Says Latinas hold fewer seats on executive boards at Fortune 500 companies than any major gender or ethnic group, making up only 1% according to the Latino Corporate Directors Association. So in 2020, the census revealed that Latinas account for over half of the country's population, which is amazing, in the past decade for 18%, 18.7% total, 62.1 million in the workforce. And I think by 2023, it's projected 9.3%. For those of you guys who get bored with stats, you need them. Just like regurgitate these because they're very important. Still, despite the growing number, Latinas still continue to be underrepresented in the corporate world. So things like Apple, Costco, Netflix have no Latinas in the senior leadership, according to USA Today. That's as of recently. So that's pretty shameful for Apple, Costco, and Netflix. And no, I'm not looking for your sponsorship if you don't got Latinas on there. So USA Today data found that Latinas largely occupy the lower paying jobs in all of these companies. So that's where they are. All of the Latinas who are sitting there working in these companies are all, you know, working on the underpaid jobs, 55% or 55 cents less per dollar earned according to their, you know, against their white, you know, non-Hispanic men to top it all off. What are your thoughts on those numbers? Vanessa, I'm going to start with you because I know you're going to go wild.
Deep breath. Woosah! Of course, it's frustrating. I think we have to continue to share our success stories, which I want to mention that should be defined per person. So Natalie's or Ruby's success should not be, you know what I mean, affected by me. If anything, I should aspire to keep going. And I don't think we have enough role models. And of course, these companies, they're in it for the business. You know what I mean? That's the difference between small business and corporate. Corporate's there to make money. They have people to answer questions to and make people a lot of money. We don't have enough resources. We don't have enough role models. We don't have enough people sharing their stories. And ultimately, we got to keep having these conversations. That's why you are important in what you're doing today to share. Like, look, I dropped out of college. It was my choice. But I said, I'm going to define success and I'm going to like make it times 10.
Yeah.
So there should not be an excuse whether you go to college, you don't go to college, you get your master's, your PhD, whatever that might be, because ultimately we're only going to see continue to see the same stats if we're not reaching out to our Latinas and being like, hey, dame la mano, because I'm going to take you to an opportunity. And we have to continue to talk and educate women about money, right? Because culturally, I'm not going to go there, but I could go there. We come from a place where we are not financially responsible, or we're not responsible, but we don't necessarily are the ones who are head of household.
Right? Yeah. I mean, you could go there. I mean, that's what this is for.
I turned into a demon. I guess, in summary, it's like, don't fucking wait for men to pay shit for you. It's like, are you fucking kidding me? It's 2022.
There you go. See, that's what I'm talking about.
Yes. All right. We went there.
Hey, I preach that to my daughters. I'm like, do not be sustained by anybody else. Be self-sustained. Yeah. You know, that way you can rely on yourself and rely on all the, you know, progress that you do for your own.
Be your own sugar mama. Figure it out. And understand exactly. Don't go buy these designer bags and these, you know, celebrities and da-da-da-da. Because quite honestly, that's not the life you want to live. You want to live your own life. And like, what legacy are you freaking trying to leave? Like, don't be empty, wasted space. We have a privilege to be here. Like, we are our ancestors' wildest dreams. I love that quote, right? But not most importantly, they've gone through so much sacrifices. I mean, come on, los Latinos en los Estados Unidos, think about all the jobs that they represent, the ones that people really don't want to do. Think about all the sacrifices that they've done, and we have privilege today to honor that. And we can be creative. We can decide what career we want, you know? So it's important, like, don't waste the opportunity.
Natalie.
So I'm going to piggyback on Vanessa. So it goes back to what I was saying earlier too. I think that the role model is important, right? So me and my upbringing, the entrepreneurial, like, there's only one route. You have to go to school. Not everyone's cut out for school. Okay. Yeah. Let's be real. Not everyone wants to study. Not everyone enjoys that, but there's brilliant people who, brilliant women, brilliant Latina women that don't want to be in school, but would be great entrepreneurs. But that's not taught to them. They don't know that that's an option. I didn't know that was an option. I didn't know anything about it. It took someone walking into my life for them to open my eyes to that option, you know? And I think that, again, repeating what she said, what you're doing is amazing, because this is bringing awareness to that opportunity. There is that opportunity. There is that option for other women to follow in these footsteps.
Ruby.
I think for the, what you were saying about all these, you started throwing all these numbers at us, and I'm going to be honest, I was like, this is a little overwhelming for me right now. I'm about to pull out a wine bottle. Like, hold on.
What you got to do is I told everybody to bring in papers and notepads and stuff.
That's serious.
You know, there's this powerhouse of, at least maybe the people that I'm surrounding myself with, but there's this huge power community of powerhouse Latina women. And and I don't know if y'all are noticing, or if you guys are noticing in the media, in the movies, in the TV shows, the House of Dragons, like, and not that I'm promoting them, right? Cause I like them, but anyway. But this women empowerment is coming up. Like, it's everywhere. It's plastered all over the place, you know? So, So I'm not afraid of those numbers is what I'm trying to say. I'm not afraid of that. Like, that is what it is right now, but it's going to change. And it's because they haven't met us yet. So
She put it in the cake.
Because I feel that, like, I had, well, in my upbringing, I had my aunt who's a broker. She's been a broker for over 25 years. So I do come from a real estate family. My father invested in real estate at a young age. So, you know, he had like 8-10 buildings when I was a kid, but he was never around. You know, it was one of those things where it was just like, Ruby, you're going to have to figure it out. You're the oldest, figure it out. And it was like, okay, yeah, I have all these people that can be super inspiring, but nobody ever sits down to teach you any of this stuff, especially in like a Latino family. I don't know what is it about a Latino family, but nobody wants to talk about it. Whatever it is, nobody wants to talk about it.
We're supposed to grind. Everybody wants us to grind that shit out.
Whatever it is, nobody wants to talk about it. And it's like, that's what I mean. Like, I do know the statistics. I have read the articles. I have read the reports. And like, but if anything, that should be more drive, right? Like I said,
motivation.
Maybe because, like I said, the people that I surround myself with now, thank God that I have a group of powerful, empowering, supportive, you know, group of women who want to see each other win, you know, who are not just bickering at each other, you know, trying to like, I'm going to step on you so I can be better. Thank God we're in a generation or we can see more of that now, you know? Because I have my tías, like, I'd be like, oh, mi tía tóxica, like that. She just bringing everyone down, you know, even though she's like successful. It's like, oh, she's bringing everyone down. Like, why is she like that? I just want to be friends. You know, but I'm being real. You know, this is really the culture, you know, that I mean, at least I grew up in. I wish it wasn't like that. Maybe we would, you know, maybe as Latinos, and at least in my family, maybe it would be different. You know, maybe we would be more money smart. I wish we were all more money smart. I wish that that came from that. But you know what? I think that if I wished it and I had it, I wouldn't appreciate it like I do now.
I agree with that. I think I'd agree with that statement. Just any of you guys, like, you guys have a lot of friends. First of all, to give the numbers out, as far as one of the reasons I give out those numbers is because there are some people who aren't reading these articles, don't even care. And if you're going into entrepreneurship, you know, when we talk about representation, you know, when our hashtag is representation matters. And the reason for that is because it really does. And if we're not occupying those seats, then we're never going to have the ability to change things in the future. You know, whether it's in our communities or whether it's in business, not having a seat at Apple or Costco or Netflix is egregious, because in no way, shape or form will Netflix, Apple or Costco understand what it is to have somebody from our culture embedded in their culture. And, you know, for me, I don't know. For me, I find it very disappointing to have some of those people there. But like what Ruby's saying, it's extremely motivating to see those numbers, because then you can turn around and see, okay, well, let's start making these individuals, you know, finding the individuals who have passions for this to be able to start going down those routes. You know, because I mean, we were talking about statistics and literature, STEM. It doesn't matter where you go. We're still underrepresented, especially in the entertainment industry. -7% when it comes to leading roles. Pretty bad. Pretty bad. All right. We're going to shift the conversation from there. That way we don't, you know, make people all like, oh, bunch of bitter old people over there. No, just kidding. It's like, oh, all they're doing is bitching. No, just... I want to talk about Hispanic Heritage Month. It's one of the reasons why we're here. You know, when we talk about representation, we talk about, you know, our familias, our culture. I'm highly interested in what are some of the traditions that you guys have followed. I know that we focus a lot of it on these 30 days, but a lot, you know, as Latino families, we do it all year round. But this is when everybody's paying attention to us. So this is why, you know, we try to, you know, heighten the awareness. But what are some of the traditions that you guys follow in your households? I'll start with you, Vanessa.
Oh, I'm actually a rebel and I don't like traditions.
Really?
Yeah. I don't do Christmas. I don't do Halloween, even things like that. I like to just, I guess the tradition that we've, you know, been disruptive to not following traditions, because it's like, if we're going to follow a tradition, let's understand why. How does it go back to the roots of our ancestors? And if it's just, you know, commercialized, then the actual tradition is we create monthly family get-togethers and do experiences. So for example, this upcoming weekend, we're going to explore the White Mountains.
Very cool.
Once a month with the family.
Okay, but you're Bolivian, so I know, I mean, you're not making salteñas? Like, what's going on?
The Bolivian food is really hard to make because the spices that are incorporated, they're not FDA approved. So it's like, you can't even get them in the country. You know what I mean? It's a tough thing to make. Yeah. Like la comida boliviana is very, very like, it's not like, hey, let's go to the market and like you, I mean, you can try, but it tastes weird and you need a lot of the spices. Or, I mean, we have over 50 types of potatoes. You only find red or white, you know what I mean? At the market. So we do have a restaurant here in Rhode Island in Providence called Los Andes. So we definitely go do and support them at least quarterly. We were actually just there a couple weeks ago. It's a Peruvian, Bolivian infusion.
That's a good name for a restaurant, by the way, Los Andes.
Yeah. And it's been beautiful to see how they've grown their business. It was a little like maybe 6-8 tables. They've taken the block now. They've bought the buildings. And now they culturally show, you know, it's not just the cuisine aspect of it. It's like they culturally show our culture, which I'm very grateful for. And you have people like the Pats, the Patriots players going to eat there, or celebrities like that. So it's really great that they're also being exposed to a third world country, because when I tell people, oh, I'm from Bolivia, and they're like, oh, cool, that's in Africa, right? Nobody ever knows where it is. And I'm like, wow.
You are definitely an underrepresented country. I know that because my kids are a part Bolivian, and never. I think we're one of the very few media companies that actually post Bolivian stuff.
I know, that's why when you saw me, I was like, who are you?
We had the Independence Day. We've had a whole ass episode about it. We've shared the food. I mean, it's amazing. So yeah, but definitely an underrepresented country. So we have to do more, because it's a very beautiful country.
Thank you.
Ruby, what about you? What are you doing traditionally? You know, some of the cultural traditions that you guys are sharing in your family.
I think that since I was born and raised in Chicago, and then I moved to Boston for a year.
Yeah,
I lived in Boston for a year, all of last year. And then now I live in Texas. So it's been a little bit of like, I'm all over the place. Like, how am I going to have all these traditions, right? But I feel that because my family was after my, you know, abuelita passed about, you know, 12 years ago, it was very difficult for my family to come together again and really share these.
Why is that? That is so true.
It's that one person that gets everyone together, and then once they're gone, it's kind of like, my brother doesn't even come around anymore. You know, that's what I hear in my family nowadays, you know, even currently. So I guess you can say that I'm, since moving to Texas, it's only a couple of the cousins. We are 20 first cousins, and I'm the first cousin. So it's always been like me, like, let's like stick everyone together, you know, and me always trying to get everyone together. Right. Because I'm still trying to continue that, you know, that my grandmother raised me. So I saw that with her, and I saw the unity that I grew up with. And then that now I don't have it. I'm like, well, I'm a creator. I'm just going to create it then.
Yeah. So right.
I do that with my cousins here in Texas. And luckily, they're all very lovey and huggy. And, I haven't seen you in forever. You saw me yesterday. Like, and it's beautiful. And it's beautiful because I feel like they have opened their hearts to wanting to do things together. So I guess you can say we are in the works of creating our own traditions.
That's good.
Within cousins, you know? And as a matter of fact, today, my aunt's just got, it's her first luxury home that she remodeled. She does flipping now. And we went to support her at her open house. So as like all my cousins, we all got packed in my car and we all went to the open house to go support her, you know? So I think that's the tradition is to stick together in whatever we do. We've gone to paint and sip. We go to the movies and we get like 7-8 tickets and everybody goes. You know, like that is our tradition, sticking together.
Yep. Very cool. Don't let Natalie know about that house, by the way. It'll
900 girl. You want to come to an open house? Come through.
In the SUV and drive all the way to Texas.
Natalie, she's like, my aunt is flipping houses. Natalie was like doing fly hands.
She's ready to sell it. An open house. I mean, I did the advertising, marketing, and the flyer and all that stuff. It was it was a beautiful event, though.
Really. That was very cool. Natalie, you're in Cuban country.
I am in Cuban country. So it's not that difficult over here to like live a fully Hispanic life all the time. I think sometimes there's more, some days that I speak more Spanish than English. But with all of that being said, like, although we are in that and I live that every day, at least in my business, I've made it a point where like 1 year I did a full on photo shoot, like wearing, Latina shirt and a Cuban bread shirt. And it was like said Cuban bread without the A, Cuban obviously bread. Not the bun, but it was the colors of the Cuban bread packaging. Right.
Okay. You know, I know what you mean. That's right. Funny.
So, and I did it in Little Havana. So if you ever heard of Miami and know the Little Havana area, it's predominantly Cuban. Yeah. So I did a full on lifestyle photo shoot of in Little Havana wearing, you know, all that stuff and like by the I Love You Miami sign and all of that. I did another year. I did a video of like why you should move to Miami. And I did all these things in Hispanic Heritage Month.
Why, right? You shouldn't or should?
Why you should. So like the culture, the people. And it was again in Little Havana, right? So I even danced salsa with un viejito. Okay. In one of the places.
That's it, yes. Right there. That makes her completely Latina when you can dance salsa with a little viejito.
Right. In the video, I'm taking like sips of Cuban coffee and all this. I think another year there's the same girl who's a small business owner that I got the Cuban bread shirt from, I interviewed her because she opened a shop in Little Havana. Like before she was solely online and then she opened the shop. So now she's a Latina small business owner in Little Havana. So I interviewed her for Hispanic Heritage Month. So it's been little things that I haven't done anything this year. So I'm kind of slacking.
Yes, you did. You just did this.
Well, I did this. Yes. So, but like, you know, every year I try to do something.
Yeah. And that's, look, this is my contribution to that whole mess. I'm just kidding.
Yes.
I'm not like Kohl's who's putting out little Latino books to sell just because it's Hispanic Heritage Month. Yes, I know all these corporate companies that put out their little stand because, oh, it's Hispanic Heritage Month. We're going to put SOCKS on the side over there for little Carlitos can run. Book for them to try to, you know, make a profit on there. But, you know, those are pretty awesome because I have, like, we obviously we support Latino businesses. So we'll go and eat restaurants. Like we just did it with an entrepreneur. She's literally paying for college by making iced coffee, in Orange County. And her interview will actually be going up towards the end of the HHM season. And so we do things like that. And then obviously, my daughter actually makes sardinas, believe it or not, Vanessa. She'll turn around and she'll do the best that she can to try to get them. Yeah, and they come out so good. Wow. They come out so good.
That's awesome.
But yeah, for Christmas, we do crazy stuff. Like we'll put an actor on the tree instead of the star. So it'll be a Christmas star, but it's actually like, so last year's it was Selma Hayek's face on the top of the tree. I think we have a picture of it somewhere on my Instagram account. Which is kind of funny. But yeah, really cool. I mean, it's great that you guys are, you know, sharing it in each individual way. And I think that that's important for people to understand. Like, you don't have to be walking around with, you know, full on South American, Central American gear as you're going to the store. But just even sharing, just even a moment like this, where we're sitting there representing, you know, our Latino communities in the best way that we can. All right, I'm going to go around Robin to try to see where people can go follow you. So, Ruby, why don't you go first? If people want to go follow you, where would they go?
I'm on Instagram and I'm also on Facebook. On Instagram, my handle is RubyCreative_Co, C-O. And on Facebook, it's just RubyCreativeCo. And then you can always email me at RubyH at rubycreativeco.com.
Awesome. Vanessa?
Simple. VanessaFarino.com. Instagram, Vanessa Farino.
You have a summit coming up, right?
Yes.
What's it called? Go ahead and tell them a little bit about that.
The Power of Women in Business. It's on November 12th in Boston, Massachusetts.
All right. So people who are wanting to go to Boston, you know, it's not cold yet, right? Like it's not freezing.
It got really
cold. You squint. You squinted. No, can't.
I'm the cold weather. I'm obsessed with all the seasons, but these last 4 days hurt.
Is it that cold?
It's just been like the shift has been like really dramatic. And I think just.
Oh, so it was like 85 to 40.
Feel this in a couple of weeks.
Yeah. Chicago's the same, actually. Chicago, that's why
Chicago, look, before we even get to Natalie. Yeah, I don't even want to talk about it.
So I don't know. Yeah.
The reason I went to Natalie last because she's in Miami and I'm in LA, but it starts getting a little windy. She's great. I've been in Chicago. I went to a boot camp there, Great Lakes, Illinois, when I was in the Navy. And I got to tell you, I will never go back for just hanging out purposes. We went there one time because my daughter wanted to do a birthday there. But I will never go back in the winter. You guys are just brutal.
We got colder than the North Pole at one winter. And then sometimes we get a little crazy and over 20 inches is okay, I guess, you know, so it does get pretty wild. So, but when I went to Boston, it was an easy transition because I'm like, oh, I'm used to this. Like, this is normal. You guys get all this.
Well, it was negative 25 degrees when I was doing pushups in the snow. So I hate Chicago. Chicago can kiss my ass. So now that we've talked about some of the worst weathers possible between Boston and Chicago, end with Natalie, who's over there in heat-infested territory.
So hey, Natalie, I'm in Texas now. Let's correct this because, like, I was invited to a pool party on October 1st, so 4 days ago, and I was in a pool, and there was a culture shock for me. All the people, all my friends, and then my new friends.
Oh, that's good.
They're like, this is normal, and I'm like, yeah, this is not
even,
normal.
Yeah, you can't this even do this in LA. This is not normal.
Let me tell you, it's October 1st. All right, like this, I'm gonna bust out a sweater. Like this is not normal. I'm gonna sweater in the pool, so I can feel like this is no.
It's 70 degrees, and Ruby's busting out her mongoose jacket.
So. No, I'm good out here. We're out in shorts, and everyone's out here in a coat. And they're like, "Oh, well, I'm from Chicago." That just seals the deal with everyone.
Natalie, the weather over there, and where do they follow you?
Well, I will tell you that here, August sucks. It's so hot, and when you're trying to show how it is, okay, in this heat, and your makeup is falling off your face, it's not fun. Okay, it is not fun. And
the reason I will not go back to Miami.
When you're wearing heels and your feet are slipping in your shoes because your feet are so sweating, like it's gross.
Oh, she's painting a picture.
Yeah, all in. That's what it feels like here. So I wish I could be like, I wish I had California weather. I'd be good with California weather. Like nice.
Hey, that's why I moved here.
Yeah, I like that weather. That's what I want. I'm kind of jealous of you. But you can find me on Instagram, Natalie_Rivero. You can find me on Facebook, Natalie Rivero. You can find me on www.natalierivero.com. I'm on TikTok as well, but I don't remember my username. It's Natalie Rivero 4, maybe. It's just not on, guys.
Just I'm like, look her up.
I'm 40, so like TikTok to, 37, but like TikTok to me is a new thing, okay, guys?
You doing dance videos?
I don't do dances. That's too much.
That's funny. All right, guys, thank you for watching our Latina Entrepreneurs Panel, part of Revolución Hispanic Heritage virtual event brought to you by WAFI Media and presented by Celso. Make sure that you support them, www.celsodrink.com. Be sure to follow us on all social media platforms at Todo WAFI and continue to be a part of the 30-day celebration of representation. You can catch the entire schedule at www.todowafi.com. I am Rafael. That is Vanessa. That is Natalie. That is Ruby. And we are out.
Desde Nicaragua hasta Costa Rica, con esta canción todo mundo se identifica. Llamen a los chilenos y a los cubanos, llamen a Puerto Rico y a los mexicanos.
estando en mi país o estando allá afuera, porque para mí mira noches en fronteras.